This is Frank Gaffney with a word about a truly great American patriot in urgent need. Rich Higgins served in the U.S. Army and as a key civilian Pentagon official and senior strategist on President Trump's National Security Council. After he left the NSC, Rich continued advising Mr. Trump and others about the threats we are facing from enemies, foreign and domestic. He chronicled his experiences over the past 20 years fighting for America First in a terrific memoir entitled The Memo. Now this courageous freedom fighter is gravely ill due to severe complications caused by the Chinese Communist Party virus. He urgently needs help to defray the enormous costs of successive surgeries and a prospective organ transplant. I urge you to join me in contributing to a GoFundMe campaign named Medical Help for Rich Higgins. That's Medical Help for Rich Higgins at GoFundMe.com. God bless you and Rich Higgins.
Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. In recent days, we have been spending some time talking about one, well, battlefront in that war that has afflicted virtually all of us in one form or fashion or another. We spoke originally with Dr. Michael Yeadon, a former senior executive at Pfizer, and then with Dr. Richard Fleming, a very accomplished clinical medical doctor. And today we are joined by Dr. Sukrit Bhakti, another highly accomplished medical doctor with advanced degrees not only in medicine, but immunobiology and the like. He has served as a postdoctoral researcher at the Max Planck Institute of Immunobiology and Epigenetics in Freiburg and the Protein Laboratory in Copenhagen. He has been with the Institute of Medical Microbiology at Gleason University. He is, in short, the chair of the Medical Microbiology divisions at the University of Mainz in Germany, where he resides. He has stepped forward, along with his wife, Dr. Karina Ruiz, with an important book entitled Corona, False Alarm, Facts and Figures. And he has been very gracious in giving us a full hour of his time to talk about his research, his understanding, and his concerns about both the coronavirus as we have had it described to us to date and what we are doing to try to counter it. Dr. Bhakti, it is very good to have you with us, sir. Thank you for taking time to visit with us about your research, your analysis, and your recommendations.
Well, thank you for having me. Pleased to be with you.
I'm anxious to start perhaps with the most basic of information, namely, how would you describe the COVID-19, or I think of it as the Chinese Communist Party virus, as a health threat to the people of, the United States and the world? And contrast that, if you would, with how it's been described by our medical and political authorities.
Well, the answer is very simple. Today, you know, almost 1.5 years since the outbreak, it is clear to the whole world that this war between the virus and us is self-invented, and there never was one. You were just being told that we were at war with this virus. In fact, now it's completely clear that the politicians and the so-called specialists who were driving this war, driving the world into a war that didn't really exist.
Fascinating. There are now, by some estimates, 3.5 million people worldwide who have been said to have died from this disease. We've been told that there are nearly 600,000 Americans who have. This would seem to be a fairly high casualty rate for a non-war, if you wish to use that terminology. What would you say to sort of properly calibrate us with respect to both the fact of those losses, but also the prospect that there could be many more, and therefore we have to deal with this as a kind of mortal combat situation with this disease?
Well, you see, the whole situation was always so messy and murky because the criterion for diagnosing this damn virus was all wrong. And there was a single criterion, which was this PCR test from Germany, that led the whole of mankind into a labyrinth. And very, very few people were able to see through this labyrinth or to rise above to see the picture. So for many months, no one really knew the truth. The problem was that this PCR test was not really allowed to be used for diagnosis, because a PCR test can never reliably diagnose an infection. It can never reliably tell you whether someone is infective and can infect other people. I'd like to just briefly talk about this. Because it's something so essential for everyone to understand. Now, you know, this virus, there are lots of people, experts in the field of molecular virology, who tell me that this virus must have been made in a lab. I keep back. I just, you know, listen to them and to their argumentation. But their argumentation looks pretty good. They tell me, you know, it's like you have a path in nature. That's the virus genome naturally occurring, okay? And you have this beautiful path going through meadows or fields. If in the middle of this path you suddenly see, you know, stones laid out very beautifully, stones that are obviously made by man, then man must have had a hand in creating this path. It sounds so logical to me. And they said, and they tell me, and they show me these stones, and I say, well, okay, sounds reasonable enough. And then they tell me something else. They say, you know, if this were true, and they tell me it is true, that means that the whole path was known. The virus was known. The gene sequence was known, okay, because it comes from a lab. Therefore, if you want to create a test, all you have to do is to relay the sequence to someone, and he can then create a PCR test that fairly reliably will show us if these stones are there. You know, not the stones, but the virus sequences. So what happened then was that this outbreak was reported in Wuhan, as we all know, in China, in December, and there weren't very many cases at all. Then, very shortly after that, the sequence of the virus that had been isolated was published. And before it was published even, this sequence was obviously known to Drosten in Germany.
Doctor, this is a very important topic, and I want to drill down on it, particularly because of what I guess one of your countrymen, Rainer Fulmer, is saying about this individual and a so-called plandemic. We have to take a short break. We will be right back with more with Sukrit Bhakti, a medical doctor in Germany and specialist on what is going on with the COVID-19 war and whether we're likely to win it the way we're fighting it. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are continuing a very provocative conversation with Dr. Sukharit Bhakdi, a medical doctor based in Germany, who has written with his wife, Dr. Karina Reiss, a book entitled Corona False Alarm, Facts and Figures. And Dr. Bhakdi, you were just beginning to talk a bit about what has been called a plandemic by a very prominent attorney in Germany who believes that we've basically been sold a bill of goods here. And a lot of this revolves around this so-called PCR test and what was its provenance and how was it abused. If you would, sir, tell us what PCR stands for and just give us a basic introduction to the test itself and how it might have been abused and to what end.
All right. So PCR stands for polymerase chain reaction. And what this reaction does is it can detect and multiply short gene sequences. So if you say this gene sequence is typical for the new coronavirus, and you focus on that sequence, and then you go through cycles. Every cycle duplicates, doubles that gene. So I like to compare this to if you have $1, okay, and you double this dollar with each cycle, how many cycles do you have to run to get to $1 million? Question, the answer is 20, all right? If you only had 1 cent, how many cycles do you have to go through to get to $1 million? Answer is 27, all right? So the higher the number of cycles that you run, the less money you had at the beginning. Now you could say, okay, let us say that $1 was the amount that is equivalent to an infectious dose of virus. So if you stick the swab in your throat, take it out, and you put it in this PCR machine, and you see the $1 million come up after 20 cycles, you can say that virus was in your throat at an infectious dose, right? If you have to go to 27 cycles, it means that you only had 1 cent and this 1 cent was not infective. All right, we're defining, all right. It's
That's a very helpful way of describing how this, the higher the cycle, the more you can distort what was actually present at the beginning.
Precisely. And that's why if you're going to establish a test that you might use to help find the diagnosis, you've got to calibrate that test. You've got to have a virus, okay, intact virus that is infective, and see how many cycles you have to go through to get to the $1 million, right? Do you have to go to 20, then you're infective? You go to 27, you're not infected. You only have fragments of it, or you have too little. So the very important thing is you must have the virus. It's like an alcohol test, you know, breath test. You breathe into this thing and you've got 1.0 and you're going to lose your license. It goes up because this has been calibrated with alcohol. Now, the fact is, you see, that Drosten, this expert, this German expert, who did the brilliant, you know, test, he never had the virus to calibrate his test. This is the incredible thing about it. So what he said, it is. And everyone must know this, because what then happened, and the WHO okayed his test. And what he said was, I don't really know, you know, how many cycles should be run to say, so let's do 45. Okay. Now, yes. And now, months after this test had been implemented and used a billion times in the world, a French group came out to say the cycle threshold that must not be exceeded is around 27 to 28. Okay. But everyone in the world, including you Americans, kept on grading this test positive if the $1 million mark was met when you ran 40 cycles. It's incredible.
So we have been induced to believe that there has been a much wider infectiousness or infected population than is actually correct. And this is driven, I was going to also say, Dr. Brechter, that one of the other things that was impelling all of this sense of doom was the idea that out of the Imperial College in London, we were going to have 2.2 million Americans lose their lives, which, again, caused a lot of lockdowns and the pursuit of these vaccines on a pell-mell basis. So when you put all this together, Doctor, we still have this question. Are you saying that the 3.5 or so million people who have ostensibly perished as a result of this disease worldwide, and the 600,000 nearly Americans who have reportedly perished from this disease, did not because their condition was mischaracterized as a result of this PCR test?
Precisely. And it was exaggerated to an extent that was criminal. Okay. So the fact is that anyone who had a positive PCR test, even with a threshold value of 40, was dubbed a COVID-19 death. You could have an accident, you know, a car accident, you could drop off a cliff. I keep telling people, you know, if this stupid virus got into me, the only way I could die of COVID-19 was if I jumped off the bridge, because that virus can't kill me. And all this was made so absolutely visible and clear by the world's leading epidemiologist, that's John Ioannidis of Stanford, who published this paper back in October. It was on the WHO bulletin. They couldn't remove it, in fact, because it was so important. And John told the world, if you clean up these numbers of false positives and falsely, allegedly, COVID-19 deaths and cases, you end up with completely different numbers. And the numbers are now corrected, that the infection fatality rate ratio, IFR, is a total of 0.15%, including all age groups. Now, so you just take that and show it to everyone who's telling you lies, okay? And that is equivalent to the flu, no more, no less. So
this obviously tees up the question of whether the sorts of steps that we have been told we must take, in the first instance, this crushing lockdown and the prospect that we will be subjected to it again if there are further episodes of this virus, mutants, what have you, on the one hand, and on the other, the kinds of risks that we must take, we're told, to have vaccines to prevent our getting this disease. The risks are obviously very different, and the presumed consequential steps we should take to mitigate them are very different. If you're right, And this doctor out at Stanford and others now, Dr. Yeadon, Dr. Fleming among them, are right. So let's walk through this very quickly if we can, sir. Specifically, if the infection fatality ratio is approximately what would be the case for your garden variety flu, you would never treat that flu with a lockdown of your society, obviously, unless you want to destroy it or perhaps achieve some other purpose, which some have imputed to this business, including taking down Donald Trump and, you know, the United States, perhaps more generally. To the extent that we're watching this drama continue to unfold, would your recommendation at this point be that under no circumstances should we persist in locking down societies, even if there is an uptick in the virus in the fall, as is being predicted, perhaps with mutant strains emerging?
But this is so much nonsense that I can't understand how a civilized and educated people like the Americans could ever believe it. I mean, these lies have been going on for 1.5 years now. Is it so difficult to understand this? And, you know, the infection fatality ratio for people under 70 is much less than the IFR for the flu. Okay, so your chances of dying with or because of this damn virus, if you are under 70 in America, is 0.0. 0.05%, meaning 5 out of 10,000 infected individuals, genuinely infected, may die. Okay? So if you're going to try to reduce that number with any vaccine, you must be extremely foolish, because no vaccine can reduce that tiny number further. And if anyone is telling you that this vaccine is working and protecting you, he or she is lying. And don't believe them. Just read. They are lying.
Okay, well, let's pause here for just a moment. We have to take a break. And again, our guest is Dr. Sukrit Bhakti. What you have just described is an argument for not taking a vaccine, no matter how good it is. What we want to turn to when we return is the vaccines themselves may be quite problematic, both for those who have been vaccinated and perhaps for those who have not been vaccinated as well, given what Dr. Fleming was telling us about recently concerning a phenomenon known as shedding. We're going to talk about that and much more with Dr. Sukrit Bhakti, the co-author of Corona False Alarm, Facts and Figures, which you can purchase through Chelsea Green Publishing. We'll be right back with more with Dr. Bhakti right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Vice President Kamala Harris has been widely criticized for her performance telling the people of Central America how to solve the root causes of their nation's problems. Maybe we're missing something. True, there's no evidence the VEEP actually understands the conditions in Guatemala, El Salvador, or Mexico, let alone that she's addressing them effectively. But in fairness, it is indisputable that Kamala Harris and her running mate Joe Biden are in fact doing a lot to address the root cause of illegal immigration in our country. Specifically, they're making America much less attractive to people who yearn for freedom and opportunity by trying to turn the U.S. into just another oppressive political system and economic basket case. Unfortunately, taking down America probably won't keep people from coming here, but it sure will ruin America for those privileged to call her home. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back. We are visiting this hour with Dr. Sukrit Bhakti, a formidable medical practitioner with extensive experience in medical microbiology in his native Germany. He has been recognized as a leader in the field. He has published over 300 articles on the subjects of immunology, bacteriology, virology, parasitology. He is the author with his wife, Karina Rice, of Corona False Alarm. Dr. Bhakti, you have, I think, made the case, drawing on not only your own research, but that of others, that the so-called coronavirus pandemic has been a product of bad testing and bad policy that has resulted in people being ascribed with death from this disease who weren't, and that the actual fatality rates are comparable to an ordinary flu. That this would be reason enough, it would seem, not to pursue vaccines, as you have said. But talk a little bit about the vaccines that we have, in fact, seen generated on an emergency use basis in this country and elsewhere, and what we know about these vaccines that might further argue against their use, let alone their universal application.
Well, this whole business about emergency use is criminal anyway, because as we all know now, this COVID-19 is probably the best treatable virus disease of the respiratory tract that you have. There are so many good treatments for it. So there is no emergency. However, because the world has accepted, due to the authorities, that it is an emergency, what that means that there's no liability that is taken by the companies that produce the vaccine. So if something happens to you, it's your own damn bad luck.
The other thing, if I may, Dr. Bakri, Dr. Yeadon, formerly of Pfizer, pointed out that the reason that we were told so assiduously that there were no other treatments for this malady was that only by doing so, at least here in the United States, could you get to the point where that emergency use was authorizable.
Exactly. Yes, of course. Of course it's right. I mean, he's been working all his life. He was at Pfizer for so many years. He knows all about it. So what Mike Yeadon says, you have to believe. I
mean, take it to the bank. Okay. So this gets us to a point where we were told there weren't other treatments, some of which were extremely cost-effective, by the way, like hydroxychloroquine. And then we were told we had to take these vaccines. Talk a little bit about the nature of these vaccines, specifically as vaccine doesn't seem to be an accurate way to describe what are actually gene therapies.
Of course, it's not a vaccine. But I don't want to go into the definition. I want to tell you how these damn agents are supposed to work and why they don't work, if I may. So these gene-based vaccines are a completely new class of so-called vaccines that have never been authorized for use in humans. Because what one is doing now is that you get the jab in your arm. It's not the dead virus or dead part of the virus that goes into you. It's the gene, all right? So where does this gene go?
The gene of the virus?
Of the spike. Of the virus spike.
Spike protein, I guess it's called?
It's the spike protein. That is, my hand is, okay, you don't see me. So imagine your hand is the spike. The spike grasps the handle of the door of your cell, opens the door, and in goes the virus, all right? And antibodies against the spike are supposed to prevent these hands from grasping the handle of the door. Now, the very basic thing, the very basic concept is totally flawed. It will never work because antibodies in your blood, and that's where they are, will never ever be able to stop a virus from entering the front door into the hall. All right, because the virus comes in from the air, and there are no antibodies there, you know, on the surface of your lung epithelium of the lower respiratory tract. So the very concept is completely wrong and flawed. And if anyone tells you anything else, he or she is lying to you.
So, Doctor, we're told that these vaccines, mischaracterized as such, but nonetheless, these vaccines are highly efficacious, that they have, in fact, prevented the disease and so on. So how do you square that testing, such as it has been done so far, with your assertion that the model is all wrong and it's a lie to say otherwise?
Well, you just look at the numbers. I don't know whether Mike Yeadon has told you the numbers, but look at the Pfizer trial, all right? They had 20,000 in one group vaccinated and 20,000 in the other group not vaccinated. And then they waited for, what, a couple of months and chalked down how many cases of COVID-19, which they described as cough, you know, maybe a sneeze, and a positive PCR test, which in itself is so ridiculous. All right. So what they were measuring, I don't know. But they came up with a number that is mind-boggling, because the number of infections in the non-vaccinated group was below 1%. It was 160 of 20,000. And in the vaccinated group, it was also below 1%. It was less than, it was 90% less. So in one group, you had 0.8%, and the other group, you had 0.2%. Now that is statistically not significant, you understand? You don't go around vaccinating 20,000 in order to prevent 150 infections of very questionable validity in the first place.
Which takes us back, of course, to the PCR testing. And
of course, and those guys were not really critically ill. What Pfizer did not tell you, but what I'm telling you now, because it's known, is that of 20,000 people getting the second shot, Pfizer, approximately 20% are going to get such adverse reactions that they are ill, they can't go to work. And of these, a certain small percentage are going to be so ill that they will never recover properly. And again, there's a small percentage that are going to die. All right? So what is the risk-benefit ratio?
So if I may, sir, let me just ask you about some aspects of this that I just want to tease out a little bit further, because this is obviously shocking. But this spike protein business, again, is ominous, it seems, because it not only isn't efficacious against this disease, as you've suggested, but it can be a source of very acute illness for those who've been vaccinated with this, and again, perhaps for others as well. Would you talk about both the implications of this spike protein as well as shedding?
I'd like to concentrate on the dangers of being vaccinated yourself, because these dangers have now become obvious, and they're supported by scientific data now. So what happens when the gene is plunged into your arm is that this gene will travel to the lymph nodes, and from there, the gene is going to reach the bloodstream. And once these gene packages reach the bloodstream, they will never leave the bloodstream again, because they can't. They're too big. You see, our bloodstream is a beautiful system of channels that are interconnected, all right, throughout the body. So you'll have these genes floating around in your whole body from head to toe, including all the internal organs. Now, if cells that contact the gene take them up, then those cells are going to start producing these spikes, all right? Now, you can imagine that the cells that are destined to take these up are the cells that line your vessel walls, because those are the cells that come in direct contact with the genes. And no other cells except the cells in your blood themselves will do this. Now, what happens when your vessel wall starts producing these genes, spikes? What happens is that you can imagine, you sit back now, this is a radio show, so sit back and look at the walls of your room, the tapestry, those are the cells that line the walls. You can see those spikes coming out of the wall towards yourself, all right? You're in the blood. These spikes are going to protrude into the bloodstream, and these spikes have one very unique property, namely, they can tickle platelets that float past. And when they tickle the platelets are set in a sort of alarm, and they're ready to go. Okay, when platelets are activated, they create clots. Your blood starts to clot. Okay, now the second thing that will happen at the same time is that there is a means for the cell that is producing this virus to show that this virus protein is being produced. Okay, so I call them the waste products of the spike that are created in the cell, is put in front of the door, which is on the surface of the lining of the tapestry. So your vessels are going to have the spikes sticking out and the waste products that are also presented. The spikes will activate the platelets passing by, and the waste products are going to be recognized and seen by your lymphocytes, especially killer lymphocytes that are trained to kill cells that dab to produce viral protein.
So in short, and we have to just take a quick break here, last break, Dr. Brockrey. We're talking about turning your body against yourself, in other words, through possible clots as well as these lymphatic kinds of activities. We're going to get into both of those on the other side of this last break. We'll be right back with Dr. Sukrit Bhakti. Stay tuned.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to this fourth and final installment of this very important conversation, I think. The third we've now had with eminent physicians and clinical scientists who have specialized in the sorts of diseases that we're talking about today. The CCP virus, I call it, the COVID-19 is the formal name. Dr. Sukrit Bhakti is with us from Germany, and we have just been describing the phenomenon of what your body does when it has been vaccinated with one of these gene therapies, so-called vaccines. Please, if you would, sir, pick up where you left off. You've got in your bloodstream these spikes protruding. They're activating the platelets. There's waste that the lymph system is going to regard as something that needs to be attacked. What does all that result in?
Well, the lymphocytes will then start to scrape on the tapestry to attack, to kill those cells that dare to produce the spikes. And the platelets are ready to go. So they will attach to those injured sites. The vessels are going to be injured on the inside. And whenever you injure your vessel, the blood is going to clot. All right? When the blood clots, if you go around inducing your blood to clot, you are under risk of dying. Every clotting event can end lethally. You don't have to have many symptoms. If it clots in your little finger, it's okay. Clots in the arm, it's not so okay anymore. Clots in the leg, and you get a pulmonary lung embolism, you can die, all right? If it clots in your abdominal space, you can also die. Or in your heart, you can have a heart attack. On your brain, and that is what seems to be now surfacing, that clots in the brain are obviously very, very common. Because what are the symptoms of clot formation in the brain veins? Splitting headache, nausea, vomiting, paralysis, blurred vision. Your hearing is gone. You can't speak properly. And your consciousness is going. Everything that people have been saying happens to 10% of people getting the second shot. You know, and if this is true, it means that 10% of people who are getting a shot had a chance of dying or had a chance of being permanently injured.
Now you're saying, doctor, that the 10% may experience some of these symptoms, but presumably for the vast majority of them, they pass. You're talking some subset that they do not, and that they translate into actual catastrophic?
Yes, that's right, of course. So of course, 10% are not going to die. Maybe overall, it's only going to be 0.01%. But, you know, if you have a million people being jabbed, 0.01% is a lot to lose because of deaths, because of this. And I don't think, I can't imagine how anyone in his right mind under 70 could take that jab. Because, you know, it's like you have a pistol that's loaded, and you shoot, and you say, okay, the chances it's going to hit my head are not so big, because I'm going to save myself from this virus. But if you know that the virus can't kill you anyway, why the hell are you doing this?
You would not do it.
And you have medicines to treat.
So finish your thought, if you would, please.
One last thing. You see, a study has now been out, it's leaked, of the Pfizer information that was presented to the Japanese authorities, okay? Experiments in rats. And there, it was reported, and the data are out now, that these genes were also found in the ovaries and testes of the animals. Now, you know, Of course, you don't know whether clots are going to form in the ovaries or testes. It may be that you're lucky, it doesn't happen. But if it happens in one of 10,000 women, and if clots form in your ovaries, I don't know whether this might end up in infertility. Then you have women.
Dr. Yin, yeah, was talking a bit about the pregnancy problem too. Yeah. Yeah. So these are knock-on effects of getting the virus, or are you saying these are the knock-on effects of getting the vaccine, and therefore, okay, so this is just another reason to be very cautious about taking these particular vaccines when other therapies are available. So let me ask you some public policy questions, doctor, because this is, at the end of the day, a show mostly about that rather than about the medical conditions that you're very familiar with. If you were advising people, based upon what you said, I gather you would not recommend anybody be vaccinated, not only those under 70, most especially not children, but also people over 70. Would you also counsel against the use of these vaccines, the ones that are now available, these gene therapies?
Well, I have to really say this business of vaccinating children is a crime. And this crime has to be stopped, you Americans. You can't do this to your children. Now, talking about the elderly with pre-existing illness, of course you can't use these vaccines on them because these people are old and they don't need very much more to send them on their last journey, all right? And if a vaccine has never been tested and shown to be efficacious in preventing death, you can't go around using it. It's stupid. I mean, how can we ever discuss this? There has never been trials, and there will never be trials.
Well, arguably, this is the greatest trial in world history, is that we are using virtually everybody as a guinea pig. But let me ask you about two other pieces of this. As I mentioned, sir, one of the concerns that Dr. Fleming shared with us the other day was that vaccinated people having this gene inserted into their system are producing the spike protein and may shed them, those proteins, in ways that could be communicated through sneezing or other ways to non-vaccinated persons and thereby make them ill. Is that of concern?
I am a scientist and I have not seen scientific data that clearly says this, and therefore I don't talk about it.
All right. I hadn't heard anybody else talk about it, but he brought it up and I just wanted to check with you on that. Lastly, sir, one of the things that has, of course, now become another very important policy debate, which what you've already said, I think, informs us as to your thinking, but just to put a very fine point on it. The current policy approach, at least of businesses and in some cases of governments, has been that they're effectively going to make compulsory the use of these vaccines through something that's come to be called in the vernacular vaccine passports. Your thoughts on what we should be thinking and doing about this idea that you will be penalized in some form or fashion if you have not been vaccinated and can demonstrate it.
Listen, you are a free country, USA. You're not Germany. What are you talking about? Of course you have to stop this. It's criminal. Listen, every time you vaccinate, you are training your immune system to re-attack whenever the need arises. So you are sensitizing your immune system to go berserk. Every next vaccination that you get is going to cause more and more casualties, all right? It's a horrible thought. If the lethality right now is only 0.1%, it's going to go up next time and the time after next and more and more and more. For nothing, because these damn mutants are no more dangerous than the other virus. So why are you doing this? And why do you believe all these lies? Just get up and say no and throw those guys out of their... get them out of their office.
Dr. Bhakti, we have to close. This is a most troubling conversation, I think it's fair to say, given what we've been told and subjected to over all these years. I consider this to be a very important contribution to the debate that we must be engaged in now, before, especially, we see the next wave of outbreaks, if there are some, and the next demands that we get booster shots or we all get vaccinated and so on. So thank you, sir, for your time today. I hope we'll be able to ask you to come back again for updates on all of this. And I thank you for your courage as well as your clarity. Your metaphors for what these various things entail have been extremely helpful to me, and I'm sure for my audience as well. And I thank you and your wife, Karina Rice, for your contributions to our understanding of this tremendously important challenge we're facing. God bless you, sir. Come back to us again soon, if you would. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.